Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 54, recorded Friday, June 8th, 2007. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: playing injured, and how bad is the travel experience really? This week, I flew out to San Francisco Sunday night, which I despise, not San Francisco, flying out Sunday night, for an 8 a.m. Monday morning meeting. Then I flew back home Wednesday morning, went to my son's 8th grade graduation that evening, and then drove the hour and a half up here for a 2-day company meeting at what used to be the Playboy Club in Lake Geneva. My guess is it's not quite the swinging place that it used to be, though I will say there were some interesting views on the dance floor last night. I was talking to my dad last weekend, and he reminded me that I had skied the 300-foot vertical drop hill out past the golf course when I was much, much younger. You'd think I'd remember something like that. Probably thought all those women were the Easter Bunny's helpers, kind of the Easter version of Santa's elves. Got to search through my folks' photo albums for a shot of that. Following up, thanks to everyone who left comments on the website and who sent notes to me telling me that the podcast had been gone too long. I have to tell you honestly that I had been thinking about making the last episode the last one for a while. I was going to put Travel Commons on hiatus for the summer and spend my little bit of personal creative time on, well, some personal things, I guess, like editing 2 years of travel videos or putting together a blurb.com photo book with my Stockholm and South Africa travel photos. However, the notes I received, they made me rethink this. So rather than give it up, I'll look for some other ways to be a bit more efficient about how I create this show. Craig Martin of the Indie Travel Podcast helps out with this audio comment with a great selection on how to avoid the outlet congestion I mentioned in the last Travel Commons episode when I talked about the amazing number of electronic devices my family took on vacation to South Africa.
Hey Mark, it's Craig here from the Indie Travel Podcast. In episode 53, you talked about the amount of electrical equipment you and the family had to carry around, and I know the feeling. Linda and I have been traveling for the last 16 months, and probably about 10 kgs of our 40 kgs that we carry around is all electronics and cables. So I've got a quick tip for your listeners embarking on short-term trips. Unplug a power board from home and stick it in your suitcase. This way you can plug 4 or 6 electrical devices into one power point. It means you only need to buy one power adapter, although you might want to. And for frequent travelers, I'd recommend a universal power adapter. And it also means you can make the most of any available power source. Sometimes when we're backpacking, we might not have reliable access to power for a day or 5. But if we put all of our stuff needing charging into one bag, hook up the cables to the power board, and head off to a train station, we can surreptitiously charge a whole bunch of stuff at the same time while we wait for our transport. I wouldn't recommend leaving this bag lying around by itself, though. It's just not worth it. So, Mark, it doesn't help with the internet addiction, and it doesn't help with the felt need to carry around all these electric devices. It's a bit beyond me. But for those that do take it all on, like myself, it does come in handy. For more travel tips, people can visit www.indietravelpodcast.com. The Indie Travel Podcast has weekly travel advice for budget and independent travelers. So cheers, Mark. See you around. Craig.
Craig, thanks for that great suggestion. Let me do just a quick translation. I'm assuming a power board is Kiwi for what we'd call in the U.S. a power strip, four to six electrical outlets, usually with a surge protector powered from one plug. I got to tell you, I did a big, why didn't I think of that head slap when I first listened to Craig's comment. Rather than cycling Nintendos and iPods and cell phones and Blackberries through one or two power adapters, you plug the power strip into the adapter and then whack all the electronics into the power strip. I've added the Indie Travel Podcast to the links section on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website if you want to hear some more from Craig. And you know, I found that for most electrical devices, you don't even need the power converter, just the plug adapter. You know, you look at the back of the power supply for your PC or the charger for your mobile phone, you'll see that almost all of them will handle 100 to 240 volts, enough range to deal with North America, Europe, South Africa, India, without a voltage converter. You know, which makes sense if you think about it. Rather than making a whole bunch of different AC adapters, the manufacturer stocks one adapter and a bunch of different cords with plug-ins with the different plug-ins at the end. Much cheaper inventory. On our South Africa trip, I found that the only charger that didn't handle the 220 volts was the Nintendo DS charger. I also received some good answers to the questions I asked in the last episode as to why an Orlando TSA screener allowed a Southwest flight attendant to keep her shoes on going through the metal detector. I received the first note a day or two after Travel Commons number 53 went up on the server. It goes, "Mark, if crew members are in uniform, they don't have to take their shoes off. I'm a pilot for a fractional jet company, and most of the time they let me slip by as well because I have an ID that says crew with some sort of TSA stamp on the back. Although we don't wear traditional pilot uniforms, they usually let us through with the ID. We are also exempt from the Ziploc bag routine and carry-on size limit. I tried in Wichita recently to go through with a coffee and was denied because I was in jeans, not in my uniform. You know, I really don't get it. I had the ID around my neck, but because I had blue jeans on and not suit pants, I was somehow more of a terrorist. I was still able to go through with carry-ons that exceeded the weight and size limit. The TSA. And I thought pilots had big egos and were on power trips. Jeez." And a second listener gave this explanation. "The reason flight crew, in particular Southwest, don't remove their shoes is this. All flight crew, at least in the U.S., when in uniform, are exempt from the TSA shoe rule. In fact, so are most ground employees of the airline and most of the custodial workers and restaurant employees. The reason you may see Southwest flight crew more than others is that Southwest management prefers we go through the mainstream TSA checkpoints like everyone else. Depending on the airport, there are typically crew-only lines, and others, Bay Cities, have a dedicated TSA area for crew and ground employees to pass through. Our jackets and computers are still subject to removal and placement in the busboy tub. Most other airline management have arrangements with the airports where crew vans drop employees off below the terminal and they avoid security altogether. We at Southwest would prefer that, believe me." Well, thanks to both listeners for giving us a little bit of behind-the-curtain insight into what's going on here. I think the last comment about airline employees avoiding security altogether is an interesting one, and you got to wonder how much longer that perk lasts after the arrest of the guy who wanted to blow up the JFK airport jet fuel tank farm. Indeed, an article in Tuesday's USA Today, the unofficial newspaper of record for the frequent traveler, reported that the arrest of the former JFK worker could prompt the U.S. Congress to step up scrutiny of the 1 million people who work in secure airport areas. Those security-free walks below the terminal could be a thing of the past. And thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can post them at the website at travelcommons.com. first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is playing injured. You know, we've talked quite a bit in the past about rude TSA screeners, delayed and canceled flights, dirty rental cars, but all those inconveniences pale when compared to getting sick or injured while traveling. I was reminded this a couple of weeks ago on a trip to San Francisco. I was taking an afternoon flight out to SFO, so I was able to get a workout in that morning. I was in the squat rack for my second set, and you know, I don't know what happened. I wasn't paying attention. I was in a hurry. I got too focused on the podcast I was listening to. I was just plain stupid. But I didn't have the right form, and the minute I tried to lift the weight, I could feel the muscles in my back at waist level just pop. I knew immediately what I had done. I dropped the bar to the stops, draped myself across one of those big Swiss, you know, sit-up crunch balls, and tried to gently stretch out, trying to keep my back from tightening up. It worked a little bit, but I knew I was in trouble. My four-hour flight to SFO was one of the tougher ones. You know, just sitting there in the seat, I could feel my back tightening up. I kept shifting in my seat, but now the pain was shooting down my left thigh. I sort of staggered off the plane, grimacing a bit as I pulled my bag from the overhead. And the next couple of days were tough as my back just really tightened up. I couldn't sleep, woke up every time I turned over. And the mile walk from my hotel in Union Square down to the office in the financial district was just a painful, painful step-by-step process each morning. I was lucky, though. I hadn't done any real damage, and each day got a bit easier. And by Friday, my flight home was much more comfortable. Though, I got to tell you, that one was a cakewalk compared to probably what was my worst experience, which was when I got food poisoning in France some years ago. My wife was accompanying me from the U.S. to Brussels to Paris as I made my sales rounds. And she stayed in Paris one day while I took an overnight trip down to Lyon. And that night, my colleague found a nice restaurant, and we sampled some of that famed Lyonnaise cuisine, which, you know, is quite a bit more than just potatoes Lyonnaise. The next morning, though, I was thinking much less kindly about it, the cuisine, that is. I was sweating, my back ached, and most of my digestive tract was moving from a state of civil disobedience to just outright rebellion. I dragged myself to the shower and down to breakfast. Met my colleagues down there. It was going to be a lousy day. I had a sales call and then a train ride back to Paris where I was going to meet my wife for an overnight train trip to Budapest. If I could just make it through the morning sales call, I could glide through the rest. So we drove over to the customer's building. We parked the car in a cobblestone alley behind. I climbed out of the back seat, still aching, still struggling to keep everything together. I slowly walked around the front of the car. My colleagues were already near the door. I shouted out to them, hey, hold on, just a second. And I gave up my struggle, leaned over, threw up into the old Stone Street gutter. I stood up and actually felt much better. I grabbed a breath mint out of my briefcase and walked quickly toward the door, feeling much more confident in my ability to make it through this meeting. You know, it was an interesting way to prep for a meeting, I might say, but I understand that puking on a customer is just not a good sales closing technique. By the time I met up with my wife at the Paris train station that evening, most of the ill effects had passed, perhaps helped by my morning purge, and I was just tired, just really weary, which actually helped out on our evening train trip. My wife complained about waking up at every stop, platform lights shining under the window shade, passengers walking through the cars talking. I was oblivious to it all, waking up feeling much better to a beautiful view of the Alps somewhere outside of Salzburg. Topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is, how bad is the travel experience really? Udayan Tripathi, a longtime Travel Commons listener, sent me a note last week asking me about Frontier Airlines. He's flying them cross-country during a trip to the U.S. in August and was wondering how they were. I told him I'd only flown them a couple of times, but each time was a very nice experience. You know, good planes, good service, free seatback satellite TV on my flight from Denver to Cabo San Lucas the last time I took them. My parents fly them every time they come out to Chicago from Denver, and they seem to have good experiences with them. So Udayan sent me another note thanking me for the information, saying, "I was dreading domestic air travel after many Travel Commons podcasts and generally moans across the web about the quality, the TSA, and so on." Well, that pulled me up short a bit. Have I been exaggerating the problems, the hassles of traveling in the U.S.? I don't know. Let's walk through it. Udayan mentions the TSA, so let's start there. Depending on your travel time, an unstatused flyer, not flying first class or not holding a precious metal, gold, platinum, frequent flyer card, is looking at about a 50-50 chance of hitting at least a 15-minute wait for your TSA encounter. Monday mornings are the worst, but Sunday nights aren't that much better. Midday in the middle of the week, say 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday, seems to be the best time, provided that the TSA keeps enough lanes open. I mean, that's the reason Sunday nights are so bad. It isn't so much the traffic load. It's just that the TSA has closed down most of the lanes and gone home and gone to bed. Now, the shoe carnival is truly a pet peeve of mine, as any longtime listener of this podcast knows. No one has yet to put forth a reasonable case to justify the shoeless shuffle flyers must endure. And with the 100% shoe screening put in place last August after the foiled British liquids plot, unless you're a crew member, as we discussed earlier in the podcast, you're guaranteed a trip on the shoe carnival. Now, once at the screening station, my unscientific, purely personal, completely subjective survey says that you have about a 25% chance, 1 in 4, of encountering a surly, rude TSA employee. Now, your odds do vary by geography and do tend to confirm the stereotype. I find the LaGuardia and Newark screeners tend to be ruder, or at least more brusque, than those, say, in Charlotte or Memphis. However, if you pay attention to what's going on, follow the instructions, and don't dawdle, most people will not receive poor treatment at the hands of the TSA. Now, comparing the U.S. experience to other countries, I can't say that the treatment from the TSA is any worse than what I've seen in Heathrow in my recent trips connecting through the U.K. Indeed, the surliness quotient might be just a bit higher in Heathrow. Outside of Heathrow, you're not as likely to hit a shoe carnival, and the probability of running into a rude screener drops. But so does the passenger population's queue discipline, the ability to sort of stand nicely in line. So while the screeners are a bit nicer, your fellow line stander is quite a bit ruder as they work to elbow ahead of you. Now, air service quality is another common complaint in the frequent traveler. A USA Today article this week reported the number of passenger complaints to the U.S. Department of Transportation in April about bad airline service had doubled from the year before. The number of complaints in April was down from the number in March, but still, U.S. Air topped the list with complaint rates for American, Delta, Northwest, and United all sharply higher. Now, notice that list. All are legacy, or what I guess are now called network carriers. With the exception of Continental, all the established carriers are doing a lousy job at customer service. And it's interesting to note who's not on that list. Southwest and all the new guys. Frontier, Udayan's choice for his August trip, JetBlue, AirTran. These airlines, with newer planes, sometimes lower fares, and happier employees who haven't lost wages and pension plans and bankruptcy courts, well, they seem to be doing a much better job of serving their customers. Now, here's the difference that I've seen between the U.S. and other parts of the world. The service experience on a legacy carrier like British Airways is much better than the service on U.S. legacy carriers like American or United. However, I'd say that the service on, say, a JetBlue is better than British Airways, and certainly much better than their European budget airlines such as EasyJet or Ryanair. Unique experiences, be they bad or good, tend to stick with us longer because they make for better stories. There's a story certainly in my exchange with a Northwest flight attendant. She told me the meal selections were chicken or beef. When I asked her for just a bit more information on the preparation, she barked, "Look, we're not a restaurant." On the flip side, there's not much of a story in 25 times this year a United flight attendant has smiled and pleasantly handed me a coffee and a package of ginger snaps on a 6 or 7 a.m. flight to somewhere. Well, this is a long way of saying that, well, yes, the travel experience could be better, but it's not yet something to dread. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 54. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. And if you like it a lot, I hope you decide to tell somebody else about it so that they can subscribe and join in all the fun. Remember to check out the Travel Commons website between podcasts. I'll blog between podcasts if I find an interesting tidbit in my readings. Since the last podcast, since Travel Commons number 53, I've put up postings on how low wage rates for many travel positions may be impacting customer service. A bit of a feeder to the second topic we just did. I also have a posting kind of on the inside story of overbooking, and it's a pretty interesting trade-off between what the gate agents go through and what the propeller heads looking at all the statistics back in the back office are thinking about. And then also commented on a report saying that flight delays are the worst in 13 years. You know, tell me something I don't already know. Anyhow, check in every now and again or subscribe to the article RSS feed to get a shot of Travel Commons between the podcasts. The bridge music on today's show was from Magnitude, the We Are Not Evil label. The songs Hey Jim by The Headroom Project, Electric Butterfly by Phallic, and Snake Eyes by Seismic Anomaly. Who comes up with those names? Well, anyhow, they're all available at magnitude.com. Check out the show notes for links. Hey, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text, or like Craig did, MP3 file, to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or post them to our website at travelcommons.com. Actually, the more material that you contribute, probably the quicker you'll see another Travel Commons podcast. Anyhow, thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in the emails, audio files, and post comments on the website. And until we talk again, safe travels, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears